Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Welcome today to part two of our discussion with Stephanie Fahuri, who is the program director for the Center for Healthcare Rights in Los Angeles. She and I had a marvelous discussion about Medicare overview and some of the changes coming at the end of 2023, it's 2024, going into 2025. And on this episode, we are going to talk about bridging gaps in Medicare, what supplemental coverage looks like, and very important, I think, for a lot of listeners is fraud protection. Stephanie, welcome back to SpondyCast.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so gaps. What are the most common gaps in Medicare that people might encounter?
So I think one of the main issues that comes up for folks, both when they are new to Medicare and trying to figure out how to navigate this entire system, and even for folks that have been on Medicare for quite some time and are trying to figure out, you know, what are my options? Should I make a change? All has to do with costs. I think first and foremost, even our very, you know, wealthy clients, everyone wants to limit their out-of-pocket costs when it comes to their healthcare, right? Healthcare is expensive. And when we talk about Medicare in general, you know, I mentioned in the previous episode about the three different main parts of Medicare, but Part A, the hospital coverage, is the only part that typically does not cost anything on a monthly basis to remain enrolled. Whereas Part B, the outpatient services, most people are paying a monthly premium to be enrolled in that Part B coverage. And then same thing with the drug coverage. Those drug plans typically have some sort of monthly premium to be enrolled. Now, I mentioned that there's two main ways to get Medicare, because I did not really talk a lot about Part C, which I say C stands for choice. It is a choice as to how someone can receive their Medicare coverage. So when someone decides, I want to have the most flexibility to see any doctor that I choose that accepts Medicare. I know a lot of people with complex health issues may have sort of cobbled together their own network of doctors that are treating their illness or their disability. And often people prefer to have more flexibility. The more flexible option is Original Medicare, because almost every doctor in the country accepts, it's often referred to as straight Medicare, Original Medicare. Sometimes people call it fee-for-service Medicare, but there's no network. It's just any doctor that accepts Medicare, which sounds amazing. The downside and the gap there is that when you have Original Medicare, you do typically have to have some type of supplemental or secondary coverage, because Medicare only covers 80% of those approved costs. And that leaves 20% of the approved costs on the table for the patient or beneficiary to cover. And if you think about, you know, in general, okay, 80% sounds like a pretty good amount that they're going to cover. But when you start thinking more, in more detail about, okay, well, what is the approved cost for my doctor's visit? What's the approved cost for my scans? What are the approved costs for chemotherapy if I have, you know, cancer treatments, right? Then it becomes 20% of some unknown number,
right?
Which is why it's so important to have some type of secondary coverage when you have Original Medicare. Now, the other option, as I mentioned, often referred to as Part C, also known as Medicare Advantage, is where you have taken your Medicare coverage and assigned it to a private health insurance company to administer those benefits. So rather than having a broad network nationwide of every single doctor that accepts Medicare, you're potentially giving up some of that flexibility to have a Medicare Advantage plan. Because like I said, at least in LA County, most of them are HMOs. I think depending on where you are in the country, there could be more PPO options. And there are some other types of Medicare Advantage plans that we don't have in California. But suffice it to say, it is managed care where you are typically, you know, going through a primary care doctor to get referrals. And that might not sound super great, except that when you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, you don't have that same gap of having to pay 20% of the approved costs. With a Medicare Advantage plan, again, my experiences here in LA County, most of the plans actually don't charge anything extra to be enrolled. There's no additional monthly premium besides what you're already paying for Part B.
Right.
And there are set copay amounts. So instead of, oh, it's 20% of some unknown number for me to go see my doctor, it's, oh, I know it's a $25 copay, or I know it's a $50 copay for specialty, or whatever it is. That varies from plan to plan.
Okay.
Medicare Advantage plans bridge some other gaps that exist with respect to Medicare, because original Medicare doesn't cover vision. It doesn't cover dental. It doesn't cover transportation to doctor's appointments. And many of the Medicare Advantage plans offer supplemental benefits beyond what original Medicare covers.
Got it.
And so, yeah, so there's a number of ways to bridge some of those gaps.
Right. And is that what all falls under Medigap policies?
So a Medigap is something totally different.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
This is why you're here, because I think we're all clueless.
Exactly. And of course, they all have names that are almost the same, right? I hear from clients that say, oh, I have Medicare. And then I ask them about the red, white, and blue card, and it turns out, no, they have Medi-Cal, because again, the names are so similar. So a Medigap, also known as a Medicare supplement plan, is private insurance that it's not health insurance. And this is important. I will explain why in a moment. So it is a private insurance plan that is not technically health insurance. It operates more like a disability insurance policy, because you only sign up for a Medigap plan if you have original Medicare. And then when Medicare approves a charge, the Medigap plan pays that 20%.
Oh, okay. I get it now. It's like when you buy your car insurance, if you crash your car and total it, you don't get all the money back. Like you have the gap so that your insurance actually covers the valuation of replacing the car completely.
Right. Or similar to like a disability insurance policy. Oh, I'm, you know, approved as disabled, and then the policy just pays you. Right. It's not, there's no appeals process that's typically required. It's not a separate network of doctors. If someone has original Medicare or is thinking about original Medicare and trying to figure out, how am I going to pay that 20% for all of these visits or right. all of these services that I need, I would never recommend to someone to just get original Medicare with nothing supporting it, because
right.
that's how people can get into massive medical debt. When
right.
you have a Medigap, it's that supplemental plan that pays your copays. It pays the one thing that the newer plans do not cover is the Part B deductible, which is around, you know, $200 and something this year. So you have to pay that out of your pocket, but then it basically covers pretty much everything else. It depends on which Medigap plan you select. It's more letters. It's just alphabet soup all over the place here with Medicare. But yeah, the way that a Medigap works is it's just supplementing your original Medicare. And if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, you don't need a supplement. You do not need a Medigap. You can't actually have both at the same time. They don't work together. So usually when I am talking to clients about how do I bridge these gaps, because original Medicare sounds great, or, you know, great, I'm eligible for Medicare now, what do I do? The options are usually original Medicare with a Medigap.
Right.
Or possibly Medi-Cal as the secondary coverage instead. Or Medicare Advantage.
Okay. So let's talk. So you can't have Medicare and Medigap, or you can have Medicare and Medigap, but not a third supplement, like a second supplementation. Is that right?
Right. You can't have a Medicare Advantage plan, like the Part C.
Right.
You can't have that and a Medigap at the same time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we haven't talked too much about Medi-Cal, but for our California folks, and we have a lot of them, how do Medicare and Medi-Cal work together?
So Medi-Cal is California's Medicaid program, and Medicaid income limits and resource limits do vary a bit from state to state because it is state-run health insurance for people with lower incomes.
Right.
And so in California, we have recently eliminated the asset limit or the property limit. So now the only thing that people, that the state is looking at when they are deciding whether or not to approve someone for Medi-Cal at any age is their income. So there's no, in California specifically, there's no more, do you have $2,000 in the bank? Do you have $130,000 in the bank? They're not asking those things. So we talk to a lot of clients who maybe have been on Medi-Cal for a long time and then become eligible for Medicare, and then they have both, or they might be on Medicare and then their circumstances change and they really need assistance from Medi-Cal. So the way that they work together is that Medi-Cal or the whatever state Medicaid program is typically considered the payer of last resort. So if there's any other insurance that can pay first, the state is going to say, that's not us, right? So Medicare is always, when someone has Medicare and Medi-Cal, Medicare is always going to be the primary insurance coverage, which is great because Medicare pays doctors more. The reimbursement rates are higher, which means more doctors accept Medicare than just Medi-Cal.
Right.
But the way that they typically work together is that Medicare is the primary insurance coverage. Medi-Cal is there to help with, you know, the patient or beneficiary cannot be billed co-pays or deductibles. You automatically get enrolled into a program called Extra Help, also known as the Low Income Subsidy Program. And the Extra Help Program is specifically related to drug costs. So if you have Extra Help, you can get a standalone drug plan that is $0 per month. You get lower prescription drug co-pays. You potentially get access to special enrollment periods to change coverage more frequently if you need to. So in addition to automatically getting this Extra Help program, if you have Medi-Cal and Medicare, the other really important thing is that the state will pay the Medicare Part B premiums automatically.
Oh.
So when someone has Medicare and Medi-Cal together, they don't have to worry about the Part B premium being deducted from a Social Security check.
Right.
Which this year it's almost $175. You know, when you are on the lower end of the income spectrum, every dollar counts. So being able to save that $175 a month, plus the prescription drug savings, plus no copays, no deductibles, that's huge. All huge on its own. And then we also talk to a lot of clients who really benefit from the additional benefits that Medi-Cal covers that Medicare doesn't, like dental, vision, transportation to doctor's appointments, long-term care services, whether that's in a nursing home or caregiver support at home through the in-home supportive services program. There are a number of additional benefits that people can get access to through Medi-Cal that Medicare doesn't cover. And so it really helps to work together for folks that are eligible to be really comprehensive coverage.
Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball.
Okay.
So I have been fangirling for probably the last 6 months over Katie Porter.
Okay.
Your representative in Orange County.
Uh-huh.
Because I think she, and maybe you have a different opinion, and you're welcome to tell me, we can edit this out.
Uh-huh.
But, right, because her platform for Senate is Medicare for everyone. And I think very similarly, it's like an evolution of Medi-Cal, like growing across the US, which would be amazing. Do you think that is a possibility that we start to move toward across the US, we start to move toward a Medicare, Medi-Cal style approach?
That's an excellent question. I think a follow-up question that I would have about that, which, you know, I will be totally honest that I am not a super expert on the Medicare for All movement, but I think one of the trends that we are seeing within regular Medicare is that the push, and also Medi-Cal, to be honest, is the push towards privatization, the push towards managed care, when that's not a model that works best for everyone. And I say this in every presentation that I do, every workshop that I do. I don't think that there is a one size fits all coverage option that makes sense for everyone. And I say that in the context of Medicare, because a lot of people will ask me, well, which should I pick? Should I do an Advantage plan or should I do Original Medicare? And I can't answer that question for individuals, because so much of it is dependent on which plans do your doctors take, which hospitals do you want to get services at. So, you know, back to your question about, you know, Medicare for All, I think if we were thinking about it in the context of Original Medicare, where, you know, pretty much every doctor out there, obviously, there are some exceptions, people have opted out, but most doctors and nearly every single hospital in the country accepts Medicare. Yes, there's a monthly premium, but there are obviously gaps. It's not a perfect system by any means. But would I like to see something like that happen? Absolutely. I think that it should be easier for people to access benefits wherever they are and not have it tied to their job. But I think the insurance lobby has such a stronghold on both state and federal legislators that I think it's going to be a tough movement to move further away from the idea of managed care and, you know, having more broader networks. Because I will say, you know, within the Medicare Advantage system, we continue to see reports at the Office of Inspector General and other investigations that are being done that indicate that many of these plans are, you know, not approving prior authorizations at the rate that should be expected, or that there are delays in access to care. We see with our clients, we see issues with, you know, especially with respect to mental health services, finding a psychiatrist in network or a therapist that accepts, you know, Medicare coverage. So, you know, I love the idea of Medicare for all and having people being able to access a broader national system that's not maybe tied to being 65 or disabled. But my impression is that it's going to take quite a bit of time to get there if we can.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that kind of a breakdown, and I think that's cool. I love the going back to Medi-Cal for a sec, the not having to worry that if you have a few dollars in the bank, you can't get your hands on healthcare. This is, I mean, I have a friend going through treatment for a stage 4 cancer who now has no income, but in he has enough money in the bank, which is his life savings or his property, and cannot get approved and will have to bankrupt himself and have nowhere to live before. And he's, you know, stage 4 treatment is not inexpensive. And how do we do that? Like, how do we actually call that like human period, right?
Yeah. And it's even more complicated. I wish I could just say that it's across the board. Every single person with Medi-Cal in California can have as much savings as they want. But even then, there's still a separate system for people that have very low income that are on supplemental security income or SSI,
right,
which is a federal program. So when someone is on SSI, across the country, they are still required to have less than $2,000 worth of savings. God. And those asset limits have not been updated in, I think, more than 30 years. I believe there is a bill in Congress where they are trying to push forward an increase to that savings limit to like $10,000. But so here in California, even though many, many people have become eligible now because of the elimination of that asset limit, for folks on SSI, they are still required to stay in poverty. And I think about people that, you know, yes, they have Medicare and Medi-Cal and they shouldn't have any out-of-pocket costs for their health care. But let's say they, you know, own a home and their water heater goes out, or they have a car and their car breaks down. If you only have $2,000 worth of savings because that's what you rely on to be able to actually, you know, get your monthly income from Social Security, it really keeps people living in poverty.
This is insanity, right?
It doesn't make sense.
When you said you like struck a chord with me when you said they are required to remain in poverty.
Yeah.
And what actually popped off in my head was like, oh, that's the next business I'm starting. We're going to figure out the solution.
Call me up. Let me know.
Yeah, for sure. It's craziness. Okay. Yeah. So then there's this other aspect, fraud, because somebody has to defraud people on Medicare and Medicaid, which.
Of course. Why wouldn't
Good
they?
God.
It is a huge growing population of people, right? In California alone, I believe by 2030, 25% of the population is going to be 65 or older, or 60 and older maybe. But it's, you know, as people are aging, the Medicare population is getting bigger and bigger, which means it is a larger and larger pool of potential fraud victims. And it's awful. It is a Medicare fraud is a multi-billion with a B dollar per year problem. And the things that I think are sometimes surprising is that Medicare, when we think about, you know, credit card fraud or, you know, some other type of fraud, a lot of times it's like, oh, well, the bank can put that money back in your account. And maybe like, it's not great to be a victim of fraud, but it's maybe somewhat victimless. With Medicare fraud, that's not always the case, because the type of fraud that we are seeing really blowing up, we have 4 cases of this currently in this month of August 2024 at our agency. And it's hospice fraud in LA County, but not specifically LA County, I think throughout the state and probably in many other states as well. The hospice industry is not super well regulated, which means in LA County, there's a new hospice agency popping up on almost every corner, it seems. A lot of these agencies also do home health care, so they might have 2 different, you know, sort of divisions. But what we are frequently seeing is people either opening the door to someone that's coming, you know, knocking on their door, going door to door. I literally had a client in this situation who said somebody came and knocked on my door and said, oh, well, we can send someone to your house to come take your blood pressure and help with some meal prep and, you know, do some like caregiving. And she said, sure, that sounds great. Signed up, didn't know any better. And then a couple of months later, she gave our agency a call because she said, I went to see my primary care doctor and he said, I can't see you. I can't bill for this visit. And she didn't understand why. So she called us. One of the things that a HICAP counselor can do is check benefits for the client. We have a direct line to Medicare, basically, where we can check benefits. And so I called and checked benefits and they said, oh, well, you know, this client is enrolled in hospice. So that's why she can't see her regular doctor, because when you have hospice, everything has to be coordinated through the hospice agency and the doctor that approved it. And you can't just continue to get curative treatment, right? Hospice is specifically comfort care at the end of someone's life. So I called the client back and I said, you know, I've learned a couple of things. I understand that you're in hospice. I'm so sorry to hear about your terminal illness. Can you share a little bit more with me about when your doctor recommended that you sign up for hospice? And she said, what do you mean? I'm healthy. I don't have a terminal illness. So it turned out whoever it was knocking on her door had some doctor that was willing to commit fraud and testify or attest to the fact that she had a terminal illness. And this impacted her access to care. Now, we were able to call Medicare, report the fraud, get the hospice taken off of her case retroactively. But not only was that hospice agency getting paid for services they weren't providing, because she said, oh, yeah, they came one time and I never heard from them again. You know, it impacted her ability to see her regular doctor. And thankfully, she was healthy. But we have seen similar situations for patients and clients literally going through cancer treatment, where they became a victim of hospice fraud, were told that they all of a sudden they were in hospice and the infusion center was refusing to schedule their chemotherapy because they were not able to bill for it until we got the hospice taken off of their record. It's horrifying.
What doctor do they, I mean, like, and how long can that go on?
And you know, it can go on for a very long time. I had another client who was a Spanish speaker who actually, this was not hospice fraud. It was home healthcare fraud, but she had seen a sign up that said free fruits and vegetable, you know, basket, went and got the free fruits and vegetables. Someone came to her house, had her sign paperwork that was in English, even though she was a Spanish speaker. And by the time she got to us, it was more than 6 months later. And when I reported the fraud to Medicare, they said that there had been, I think, over 37 home health visits billed to her Medicare account, none of which she had ever actually received. So this can go on for a very extended amount of time if the person doesn't realize that there's a problem, the couple of things that we tell people to try to help prevent fraud is, first of all, don't give out your Medicare number. Protect your Medicare card the same way you would protect your Social Security card, right? If someone calls you on the phone and you don't know who that person is and they say, oh, well, we can send you some free COVID tests if you just give us your Medicare number. Let me confirm your address. I would say hang up, or say, if you already have my address, you should already have my Medicare number. Don't share your Medicare number with strangers. That's the first thing, right? You wouldn't give out your Social Security number to some stranger on the phone, hopefully. The other thing I would say is, when you get the notices in the mail from Medicare or from your Medicare plan, if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, the EOB or the Medicare summary notice, those are the notices that list all of the different services that have been billed to your Medicare. And if something on there doesn't look right, right? We've had clients, so I mentioned hospice fraud. COVID testing fraud is also huge. We had one client that had like 19 COVID tests billed to her Medicare. She had received none of them, but she noticed it on her Medicare summary notice when she was reviewing it. It's a mess. So it's a mess out there.
Where in the hell, sorry, I don't usually swear on Spondycast, but like, where is the investment by the federal government to stop this? Like, this is easily stoppable by the government who owns the Medicare system.
So
all you need is like an algorithm to detect anomalies or something within the billing.
You would think so. Obviously a lot of healthcare is highly personalized, so they might not really be able to determine, was this person fraudulently enrolled into hospice or not, just by
I disagree. You know why I disagree? Do you ever get the phone call from the credit card company and they go, someone's trying to spend $327 at a Walgreens in New York City on your credit card. And I'm always like, that's so crazy that you guys flagged that. Like, I travel constantly.
Yeah.
But they're like, we are so good at knowing. I've never had anything not get caught. And it's...
Yeah.
There is tech out there that can solve this problem. Let's go start a company.
That sounds great. I will say that one thing that the federal government is doing through the Administration for Community Living, which is also the federal program that oversees all of the SHIP programs, like including HICAP, ACL at the federal level also has a program somewhat similar to ours that we work with, called Senior Medicare Patrol. And the Senior Medicare Patrol program is intended, again, this is a program nationwide. Each state runs their own SMP program.
Okay.
And these programs are intended to help prevent, detect, and report fraud. So if we handle a lot of our fraud cases in-house, because we do have another attorney on staff who is very competent to do this. And I've helped with some of these fraud cases, but we do have a mechanism by which we can refer cases to SMP and they can push some of these more complex cases forward to be investigated by the Office of Inspector General. So is this a Band-Aid? Probably, because I think you're right that fraud, there should be a way for the government to detect fraud before it ever negatively impacts the patient or beneficiary. And I think one example of that I think should be easier to determine is some of the durable medical equipment fraud that we see. It was very prominent right before COVID, where someone would open up their door and on their porch, there'd be a box with a knee brace that they had never ordered, their doctor had never ordered, and it was billed to their Medicare by some doctor in another state, right? So if I live in California and some doctor in Texas is sending me a knee brace, that should be a red flag to the Medicare system that did I actually see that doctor? Why is this doctor that I've never met with in person ever sending me a knee brace and billing it to my Medicare? It can get really messy.
It's insane.
Yeah, because you would even think, okay, well, again, another victimless crime. It's not saying I owe anything. Hey, now I got a free knee brace or a free neck brace or whatever. But we have actually had clients who later needed a legitimate knee brace. Obviously, whatever came to them in the mail probably wasn't the right size, wasn't suited to anything in particular that they would need. And we have had clients that have gotten turned down by Medicare saying, we're not approving the knee brace that your doctor is now prescribing because you already have one. And it's been less than 5 years since you got the other one. And at that point, the client realizes, oh yeah, that thing I got in the mail 3 years ago that I pushed into the back of my closet, I guess I need to report that as fraud. So again, these types of fraud issues seem usually, again, we think about it as from a monetary perspective, and it does cost Medicare a lot of money. That is without a doubt. And the more fraud there is, the more everyone's Medicare costs are going to continue to go up if the program is spending all of this money on services not actually needed or accessed. But the other, I think, really important thing that people need to keep in mind is that fraud can impact your access to care. And the last thing anyone wants is to get turned away by their doctor because somebody put them in hospice, or to be told, oh, we can't fill this prescription for you for your durable medical equipment that you need as a mobility aid, because somebody sent you one 3 years ago and it was never reported. So, but I would just really caution people to keep an eye out for, you know, the services that are billed to Medicare on their account. If something looks fishy, you know, ask the provider. If you see a provider's name on there that you have literally never heard of, never seen, not even remotely related to any of the doctors that you do see, that is something that can be reported, and the patient or beneficiary can always contact their local HICAP or SHIP program or SMP, but you can also do it, report the fraud yourself by calling Medicare. And they should be able to take those complaints.
So let me ask you a question, because we're a little in the weeds here, but when you get a Medicare EOB, is it like the ones I get from Blue Cross that are like 52 pages long?
You know, I think it depends on how much medical care you got in that quarter. I think the Medicare summary notice is pretty straightforward in terms of how it's laid out. It has the date of service, it has the provider, it has the what the service was, the code, and then it says whether or not it was approved, yes or no, and was it sent to, you know, any type of secondary coverage. But you only get that Medicare summary notice if you have original Medicare. So if you have a Medicare Advantage plan or Part C, you're going to get an EOB that probably looks a lot like what you get from your insurance, which they might be very long. Sometimes it's like, well, all of that looks correct, except the date of service doesn't match the date of my appointment, right? There's a little room for some, I would say, maybe not error exactly, but some of the details are pretty confusing to try to read on those forms. Right. But again, this is a great thing to bring to your local HICAP or SHIP program, because we can help walk you through what some of that stuff means.
Yeah, I'm looking at one right now, and it occurs to me that to stop Medicare fraud in the hands of those who have Medicare, it would behoove them to like redesign the summary statements to show you this quarter you spent 4 times on medical costs. Is that right? Or There's nothing contextual. As I look through it, there's no context or like leading or like lagging information to show you where, I don't know. I think all these things, people don't read them. I don't read them.
And no, of course not.
The more you can get them just boiled down. Like there should be like a one pager at the front. Like,
right.
Like here's your ups and downs from last quarter, or you're trending toward using less, which thank you from the government, because now we're spending less.
And one, bucks if you didn't. One change that I was going to mention earlier that is taking place next year, which doesn't totally address this issue that we're talking about with the EOBs and the services, but Medicare Advantage plans are going to be required to share a mid-year notice that, hey, this plan that you are enrolled in offers all of these supplemental benefits and you haven't been using them. Here are the benefits in your plan, like dental, vision, you know, the free gym membership, the transportation, all of those other things that are often offered as supplemental benefits. The Medicare Advantage plans will be required to start doing a little bit more of that, yeah, like letting people know, hey, you have these benefits that you're not actually using. But yeah, I think a redesign of an EOB or a Medicare summary notice would, is it likely that people are going to read it either way? I don't know. We have a lot of clients that don't read their mail.
I just think if it's something like when I get an infographic of something that's like boils it down and it's really easy. I mean, you need a graphic designer and maybe a data analyst. Like you could reinvent. Okay. I'm going to stop there. but this has been fascinating. Did I miss anything on fraud?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think this is something like, can we just recap, right? Don't give out your Medicare number. Mm-hmm. Take a peek and like maybe mental note your any changes, significant changes. Don't accept things that you didn't order in any way. Never give out your Medicare number. Never give out your Medicare number.
Totally. And I think that applies both to over the phone and to people coming door to door. Nobody should be coming door to door unless you have specifically invited them there. And this is true for Medicare as well as for everything else in life. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah.
And so when people are calling and offering you free things, or you see a sign up in your neighborhood that says free fruits and vegetables, you know, that's wonderful if it's someone you know, but we hear too frequently from clients that have misplaced their trust in someone who then took advantage. And, you know, the do not call registry doesn't really do a whole lot, but I do tell people every time I'm out in the community, you know, feel free to hang up the phone on people. You don't have to be polite because they're not trying to be polite to you. They're trying to sell you something.
Money. Yeah. Oh, okay. So on that note, I know this is we're going to close this on a really nice note. So it occurred to me after stalking your LinkedIn profile, that our person we have in common is Johnny Immerman.
Oh yeah. Johnny's amazing.
He is. Right.
What an energetic, joyful person.
Yeah, he is one of my favorite people. And so for anyone listening, Johnny Immerman started Immerman's Angels, which was a one-to-one peer support group for cancer patients and revolutionized peer support, I think, in cancer. Just a delightful human being. I'm hoping to see him in September in New York. So I'm going to have to tell him we talked, and he never forgets a human being at all. So I don't know how you guys know each other. I'm assuming from your prior work.
From my prior work. And then it turns out that he grew up in Michigan where I did. I think he also went to the University of Michigan. Yeah. I think he might be a couple years older than I am, but we know other people in common, but we did initially get connected through my work with the Cancer Legal Resource Center.
That is crazy. Yeah, I met him 3 years ago on August 12th. He was one of the first people that ever heard the idea for my business. And he was like, you are going to do this. And when everyone else said we were crazy. Aww. And yeah, I love that man. I am forever grateful. So that is the way I like to end Spondycast, because I always want to end it on hope. So yeah. What is your great hope for the future, or that you want to share?
You know, I'm very hopeful about the progress that we've been making, both with respect to Medicare and Medi-Cal, and improving access and affordability. I think that we have a long way to go. Things are, you know, going to continue to be overly complex, probably for the foreseeable future. But I Yep. do feel very hopeful that there are people, there are adults in the building that are empathetic and care about people's ability to access care, not just have health insurance, because I think having insurance and accessing healthcare are two very different things. But I feel really hopeful about the direction that we're moving in to improve equity and access for more people throughout the country.
I love it. That's such a, yeah. I'm relishing in the Johnny Emmerman moment, but yeah, no, it's so amazing how, I mean, the work you guys are doing is like, it's got to be life-changing for so many people.
Yeah. I mean, I hear from people all the time who say, I've called 5 other places and you or one of my counselors, you know, one of my staff, you know, you, the royal you, have explained things more clearly than anyone else I've ever spoken to about Medicare. Yeah. They will say, I called Medicare. I called Social Security. I called the drug plan. I called the Department of Public Social Services. I talked to a broker, right? All of these things, this system is so complicated. And that is why we exist. Do I wish that my job didn't have to exist? Do I wish that everything was so straightforward that people didn't need to set up one-on-one appointments right. to even begin to understand their health insurance options?
Right.
Or that you didn't have to go through a lengthy registration process and, you know, to get registered to do this type of volunteer work, because I have volunteers and staff doing this. You know, do I wish the federal government was, you know, giving more money to help support these systems? Absolutely. But, you know, I hope that we're able to continue for another 40 years, or maybe 40 years from now, our agency will be obsolete because
we'll solve it.
Yes.
All right. On that note, can I take a selfie of us?
Of course.
I'm going to send it to him. but this has been great. Thank you. I knew you were good people.
Oh.
You can get my... There we go. It's a terrible picture of me, but he'll get the point. thank you so much for joining us. This has been fascinating, and yeah, all the good work you do. And on behalf of the Spondylitis Association, I thank you for the work you do. But yeah, let's do this again when things get, well, maybe we can do an annual update.
That would be amazing. I would be so happy to do that. I think there's, like I said, constant changes. So, it would not be too much to have an update every year.
Awesome. I love it. Stephanie Fahuri, thank you so, so very much.
Thank you, Jill. It's been a pleasure.
Spondycast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.